All right, this is Take 3. Welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. I'm Brian.
Hi, it's Johnny.
And today, Johnny, if it wasn't painfully obvious by the opening, we're talking about the Green Lantern Corps.
I didn't hear the opening, so I don't know.
Well, you heard. Yeah. Anyway.
You meant In Brightest Day and Darkest Night.
Blackest Night, Darkest Night, Darkest Souls, something like that. Anyway. This week we are talking about the Green Lantern Corps. And we are actually going to focus on some of our favorite non-human members of the Green Lantern Corps this time around. But before we get into that, first off, how's your week? Doing good?
Yeah. No complaints.
Cool. So some interesting stuff happened. Amazon launched their pilots for pilot season since last we recorded. And we got a couple other little bits of comic book news. But for the most part, we're going to talk about Green Lantern today. But let's kick it off, The Tick on Amazon pilot season. We both watched.
I watched all three of the Amazon pilots.
Yeah.
And that.
What was your favorite?
I think the Van Damme one was my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think of the three. So I watched all three as well.
Yeah.
Of the three, The Tick is the one that's most ready to go.
Right.
The Van Damme one was funny. I could see how it would need a little bit of work to get it ready, but it's almost there.
Yeah.
The Kevin Bacon one was just stupid.
It's dark comedy.
Yeah. And I like dark comedy, but.
Well, it's more a female dark comedy, yeah. Too.
But yeah, so The Tick, what were your overall thoughts?
I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was what it was because it wasn't set up to be anything but a pilot.
Right.
So, you know.
I liked that they focused on Arthur's origin in this episode. Having the Tick just pop up out of nowhere, I think, worked. And
well, they did it where you question, is the Tick real or
well,
not?
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
And I liked Peter Serafinowicz as the Tick. I wish he was bulkier, you know? It's kind of like what we had talked about with Negan before with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, right?
Right.
He's a little too svelte. Like, this Tick was, like, a little too streamlined.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a skinny guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like they got a muscle-bound guy.
No. I mean, Patrick Warburton.
It's not putty.
Yeah. So, putty.
Yeah.
But, no, I enjoyed it.
The only two things he's known for is putty and the Tick.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I like him in everything he's been in, but... I do seek him
Soarin'
out. Yeah.
Soarin' at Disney.
Yep. And he was in Ted and Ted 2.
Wow. I've only watched it once, so I don't remember.
He was the guy who worked with Mark Wahlberg who kept going out and having sex with men, but he wasn't gay.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then at the end, he's like, I think I might be gay.
Okay.
And then in the second one, he's dating Michael Dorn.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they go to Comic-Con together, New York Comic-Con together, and Patrick Warburton is dressed as a Tick, and Michael Dorn is dressed as Worf, and like, beating up, you know, quote-unquote nerds, which was, you know, pretty darn funny.
Yeah.
I liked it. I really liked that, like, action set near the end where the Tick was going through the warehouse.
Yeah.
And was getting attacked, and he was laughing maniacally.
Well, that's where it kind of confirmed that he was real,
right?
Because at first you're like, wait a minute, is this just Arthur's imagination? You know, is this guy in Arthur's imagination? And then when he destroys the entire dock,
right,
you're like, okay,
yep,
yeah, he's
yep,
real.
There he is. Jackie Earle Haley, even though he was in it for just a minute as Terror, was fun. So it's definitely dark.
Yeah
which is good. I definitely like that. But we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, I thought, you know, it was good. Ed or the Van Damme one probably would be the best two on there, but I bet the Kevin Bacon one will be the one that people...
Did you vote?
I haven't yet.
And this is just for the comedies. So this isn't isn't all of them.
Right,
this
but I mean, it's comedies. Just one of those things where it's like, you know, you go back and forth because, like I said, Van Damme was good to that.
Right.
That was fun.
Yeah. No, the Van Damme one was definitely fun.
Yeah.
Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Yeah.
So but
him doing a comedy is fun to see because it's like, you know, it's a fish out of water type looking thing anyway. So yeah.
So
either one of them, if it's either one of them, I'll be fine with that.
Yeah.
I won't watch it if it's the one. Yeah. It's not of any interest to me.
Yeah. No, I think it's been kind of universally like poo-pooed.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, I like Griffin Dunne and I like Kevin Bacon, and I was like, yeah, cool, two actors that I like, mm-hmm. but you know, just the story wasn't for me.
Sure. All right. So our second bit is there's Thor Ragnarok is shooting right now, and there's been hints of a quote unquote magical Marvel cameo.
Anthony Hopkins?
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins. No, he
actually has been photographed on set. But yeah. He doesn't look like Odin.
No?
No.
Maybe he's playing Anthony Hopkins as himself.
Well, it looks like he doesn't have the eye patch in this picture mm-hmm. that they showed him. It wasn't really a scene
right.
or anything, but he's on Earth in the scene and in the picture they showed. So maybe Odin was banished
okay.
by Loki.
So, maybe. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Doctor Strange showing up. Yeah. I could see it happening, but, you know.
It seems weird. Like, like Doctor Strange is in that Thor slot.
Right.
You know, the beginning of November. And the pictures they have, they're holding papers with Doctor Strange's Sanctum address. Sanctorum address. So
it's just a shot. It's one of those things where it's a shot where you go, anybody could have photoshopped that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would be cool, like, especially, like, trying to think of how Loki and Doctor Strange might interact.
They don't like each other.
No. No, they don't. But, yeah, so Doctor Strange coming out November 4th, so it's right around the corner. So
right.
We will, and we'll find out about Thor next year. But I got to say, I'm digging the
Thor's got a lot of stuff going on if they have Doctor Strange in there and Hulk. The Hulk.
Yeah. I'm
and Sekar, because if he's wearing that's going to have something to do with Sekar.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So,
hell for fun. Let's just jam Beta Ray Bill in there, too.
Well, you know, like I was kind of hoping that's who they were going to have as the cameo. But
yeah.
I'm digging the Thor Ragnarok logo, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, it's the one they showed at Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's like super like 80s retro, kind of like Rad Racer. Do you remember that game?
Well, have you seen the guy who's directing this, the movie did called What We Do in Shadows. Oh,
I haven't seen it yet. Do I need to watch that?
It's fun. It's okay. It's a vampire documentary and it's just fun.
Oh yeah. No, I know about that, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah. It's really fun.
It was
really
on HBO. Well, I don't know if it still is.
I think I watched it on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was on Amazon for a while.
Yeah. I don't know. These things kind of come and go.
One that, you know, I heard Freddie and them on 9/11 podcast talk about it, and okay, that's one I want to check out. and it's a lot of comedic actors, like British and Australian comedic actors, so it's, you know, taken with a comedic twist, but there's some dark parts in there.
Is it one of those things that is it improv or was it like an actual script?
I think it was scripted, but like, you know, effects wise, with this being an effects driven movie, obviously Thor is an effects driven movie. The effects in there were so seamless for it being a low budget movie that I'm like, okay, this guy's going to be able to handle doing Thor. And then I think some of the actors from that are going to be in this one too. So, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Okay. All right, and then the last bit is just some Marvel Comics news. We know the Death of X is coming out, and they're kind of splitting up the X-Men and putting them in other books, a la the Fantastic Four, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have they're re-releasing the Champions title.
Right,
And we kind of geeked out over the Scotty Young cover that we saw.
Yeah, I sent you the picture of that.
And apparently there's going to be two action figure variants.
Action figure
variants. You know, with the ones I like to get.
Yeah.
But they're saying that it's going to change the world, you know, so it's a
the
team
Marvel
of
Marvel world.
Yeah. Well, maybe who knows, but it's a team of young Cyclops, Viv Vision, the Totally Awesome Hulk.
It's
Nova,
all the teenage characters.
And Miles Morales. Yeah. It's the most diverse team Marvel's ever had. Miss Marvel. I forgot. Yeah. Sorry.
It's literally the all new Avengers team
with Cyclops.
Kids leaving that group and going and forming the Champions again.
I wonder if Cyclops is gonna be the leader.
I hope not.
Yeah
I hope.
I really like Teen Cyclops, like the time displaced one, because he has no idea where he fits into the world.
Yeah, and he shouldn't be a leader at that point.
And he's good with,
if anybody should be the leader, should be Amadeus
Or Miss Marvel. She's like, yeah. I don't know. I've been reading.
I've never read anything with that character, so.
So I've been reading Nova, and I've been reading Spider-Man, and yeah. she shows up in both because those three are kind of sure. like their own buddies, team.
Yeah.
And she's an interesting character. I don't know if it's enough to get me to pick up the book, right. but, you know.
I'll definitely check out number one of the Champions yeah. and see if it's even something that I'll be, like, you know, that'll pull me in.
Yeah. I mean, considering, like, really, I get almost all of the solo titles of this particular group.
Okay.
You know, I get Nova, I get Spider-Man.
Totally Awesome
I
Hulk.
I get Totally Awesome Hulk, which yeah. is probably one of my top three favorite comics right now.
Okay.
And then, again,
I forget
all the X-Men
books. Who's on this book?
Umberto Ramos is doing the art.
See, the art definitely is an attractor.
And I forget who is writing it. It doesn't say.
Umberto from the Impulse days.
God, yeah. He and Ethan Van Sciver on Impulse, like, their different styles of how they drew him were, like, completely, like, different, but like, yeah. completely awesome. Like, the Young Justice that Ramos drew for a while yeah. was great and all of that fun stuff. But
somewhere I've got a sketch from him.
Cool. Cool. Alrighty. Well, are you ready to talk about our favorite intergalactic military / police force?
Sure.
All right. So we wanted to talk about the Green Lantern Corps,
yeah.
but we don't necessarily want to focus in on, you know, the four Earthbound members that...
Six now, isn't
it? Well, yeah. Well, I was going to say the four that everybody knows, which is, you know, Hal Jordan.
Who?
John Stewart.
Everybody knows John Stewart because yeah. of Justice League.
Guy Gardner.
Who?
And Kyle Rayner.
Who?
I'll kill you. And then the other two kind of new
Death
ones
Kyle Rayner.
Are Simon Baz and Boz. Jessica.
Boz.
Oh, sorry, Simon Baz. And is it Jessica Cruz? Is
yeah.
that what it is? And they are currently the ones, Simon and Jessica are headlining the Green Lanterns book
mm-hmm.
by Sam Humphries, which I have officially dropped.
Wow.
Actually, this is the first month since as long as I can remember that I'm not getting Green Lantern books.
Wow.
So yeah.
Any reason behind that?
They're just not good. The Hal Jordan one is just like it picks up where the New 52 left off.
Okay.
With the whole like Lost Lantern thing
sure.
and everything. And
they're coming back.
They're
right.
Spoiler
they're
alert, they're back.
Yeah.
But like he opens it up and he's still got it's still in that like trench coat look uh-huh. with Kronos's gauntlet and, you know, backpack thing. And I don't know, it just that storyline did not work for me at all. And that's where I kind of dropped out of the New 52, even
right.
though I kept buying it. And then the other thing is in Green Lanterns, the Red Lantern showed up.
Oh, sure.
And it's like, you know, the guy's no longer a Red Lantern, which I thought was one of the cooler things that they did.
Yeah.
And, you know, he being undercover.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know. Some people should retire eventually.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the ring will let you retire, so.
It will now?
I think the ring's always been, if the subject's not willing to be a Green Lantern, then why would the ring stick around?
I don't know. The ring tends to kidnap people and take them to Oa, you know, against their will if they want to be or not.
I think that was Earthlings. That's like the last Starfighter. Nobody on Earth knew about a Green Lantern until
true. Very true.
Hal Jordan, but like
until
you know, the
Abin
other
Sir.
The other alien races out there knew what the Green Lanterns were.
Yeah,
and that you know the Green Lanterns obviously had been around for a long time.
Long.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it's one of those things where the Earth wasn't so open minded.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, in Abin Sur,
yeah.
who
crashed
onto
yeah.
Earth, like, wasn't that ring wasn't supposed to go to Hal Jordan.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was just he was the closest
yeah. what was
worthy
to go
soul.
To his son, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, who later ran the, was it Black Sun? No, not Black Sun. It was Black something Syndicate.
I don't remember.
He ran a crime syndicate.
Yeah.
It was right around when Rebirth,
whiny
the original
baby.
Rebirth happened and all
baby.
That.
No, he was a whiner because he wanted the ring, and then when he got a ring, he couldn't handle mm-hmm. the power.
Yep.
And then he eventually came back as a Black Lantern, and
yep.
everybody came back as a Black
everybody
Lantern.
Was a
yeah.
Black Lantern. A couple interesting things have happened to Green Lantern, and I'm going to say, I don't know, the last 10, 15 years,
mm-hmm.
is it used to be, so there's 3,600 sectors.
Right.
And it used to be there was one lantern per sector.
Right.
And a sector is more than one planet, even though the Earth Green Lanterns don't seem to pay attention to any of the other planets in their sector.
Yeah.
But they've since, the Guardians of the Universe, who are these tiny little blue guys in dresses who... kind of are very Gandalf or Dumbledore like. They're cryptic. Yeah. They don't really give a lot of answers.
Damn,
they
Owens.
They tend to they tend to cause more problems than they fix. They decided to double up. So each sector now has two, except for Earth, which has six. Or 2814, which is Earth's. Which is funny because the designations are 2814.1, 2.3, 2.4.
Sure.
But yeah, it's, I don't know, for DC, it's definitely their galactic, their, you know, cosmos, whatever you want to call it, stories.
Yeah.
Where the best stories happen far, far away from Earth.
Right.
And by doing that, we have a ton of just really cool alien characters.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You had suggested we kind of put some of our favorite.
Right.
And I mean, yours are great, and they're all like right up there on mine.
I think every single one of mine has died except for Kahan.
Okay.
Literally, at one point, every one of mine has been dead.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And that and back.
Dead and back. Yeah.
Abin Sur is the only one who hasn't come back.
The last time he was back was Flashpoint.
Right.
When
right,
he yeah. didn't die.
Right.
You know, but yeah, no, you have Abin Sur who. Was the Green Lantern for 2814.
Yeah.
And he crashed on Earth. And Hal Jordan.
There's
ended
a reason
up with
why
ring.
He's on
ring.
My list, actually.
Okay.
So DC used to have a book called Legends of the DC Universe.
Right.
Where it was just, you know, like mm-hmm. 3-4 part stories.
Yep.
There was literally Abin Sur was a recurring storyline. And it was before he had died.
Right.
But a lot of it took place on Earth. Throughout history.
Okay.
So at one point he's in the Wild West.
Nice.
And that
with Jonah
hunting
Hex.
Down a villain. I don't remember if Jonah was in it, but I think one of the Wild West DC characters was in it.
Okay.
But it was literally him hunting down an escaped prisoner at one point and just different stuff. Like all the stories tied together at the end. And that you knew that everything was tied together. And it was just fun.
Cool.
It was, you know, cool to see a character who didn't get much of a spotlight because
right.
he died and getting a spotlight. It was like, okay, that's cool.
So, yeah. So he showed up in Showcase number 22 for the
yeah.
first time ever in the September, October 1959.
You mean the first book that Hal Jordan showed up in?
What?
Yes.
So, but yeah, no, Abin Sur is a great character. Definitely. Your second one is Kilowog, who... is the, I guess, drill sergeant, if you would,
yeah.
of the Corps. He's responsible for training and all of that.
Training all the poozers.
Yeah, poozers. That's his favorite word. Who's right. your favorite voice actor for, like, Kilowog? Was it Brad Garrett?
Did Dennis Haysbert play him at one point? That's the one I think I remember the
okay.
most.
Yeah.
And would make more sense than most people.
Yeah.
Just because Dennis Haysbert's like always been a military type guy.
I mean, oh yeah,
the unit.
Yep.
That, so.
The unit when he was President Palmer on 24.
Yeah.
And,
he's just
and
kind of
stuff.
A you know. You'd follow that guy.
Yeah. Now, as I was getting everything together, I was surprised to find that Kilowog didn't show up until 1986
mm-hmm.
for the first time. I would like he just seemed
he's
like
in,
he's such an older character.
He shows up around the time the crisis
mm-hmm.
was going on.
Yeah, Green Lantern Corps. 201.
Yeah, because the Green Lanterns, I think the battery had broke, and the Green Lanterns, most of them came to Earth, and were living in California
okay.
at that point.
Cool.
So like Aresia and Kilowog and
mm-hmm.
I think Chaslin and a bunch of other ones were
yeah.
like living in California and doing, you know, their deeds here because they had no leadership or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Hal had lost the ring at that point, and John was...
Did Hal lose it? Or he gave it up.
At one point, he lost it. Like
okay.
he was kicked out.
Yeah.
So he's been kicked out a couple times.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kilowog's one of the, like, more recent ones. And that, and I think like Kilowog I came across during the third introduction or the third series of Green Lanterns, like the stuff that happened in the late 80s, early 90s.
Okay, cool.
And I'm like, I like this guy. He's yeah. big and he's in charge. And yeah. You know, he ain't taking nobody's shit.
But so. He's still awesome and, yeah, you know, yeah. you know, definitely
one of the capable. Best made DC direct figures.
Definitely. Yeah. I think one of the cool things about Kilowog, too, is after his death.
Yeah.
At the hands of Hal Jordan as Parallax, or when Parallax infected yeah. Hal Jordan, was, you know, and I know you've been saying Death to Kyle Rayner all week.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a great arc where when Kilowog came back and he was the Black Lantern at first. Yeah. And
he was kind of a ghost character.
He was the shadowy character. And then his final rebirth, if you would, for lack of a better term, was really, really great. And it was like kind of the spark that brought the Lanterns back yeah, into yeah. being along with, you know, the Torchbearer himself. Right. But, yeah, no, I love Kilowog. He's an awesome character. All right, so your next one is Thal Sinestro.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sinestro is interesting because he's the greatest of all Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
At least in his own mind.
I just, because Emerald Dawn.
Right.
The Emerald Dawn story where he was a Green Lantern mm-hmm. and he was training Hal to be a Green Lantern, even right. though he didn't want to.
Right.
Was really a standout character or standout of the character. Because you see why he went the way he went and mm-hmm. why, you know, it's like we need a little bit more control.
Right.
And it's like not just running wild. Like Green Lanterns were running wild at that point.
Absolutely. Because
he had been friends with Abin Sur.
Well, Abin Sur was his best friend.
Yeah. And Abin Sur was more looser and, you know, like a cowboy.
Well, and at that time, the Lanterns weren't supposed to cross
right.
boundaries. And Abin Sur and Sinestro had teamed up a few times right. when each needed each other's help. And there was that respect, that friendship, yeah. that just genuine affection. Which,
what the Guardians yeah. were doing to the Green Lanterns, Sinestro was against. And it didn't follow suit with the Guardians. And
so for there. People who don't know, just kind of explain what the Guardians were doing at that time.
They weren't keeping control of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I mean, criminals were running wild and everything else. And, you know, they weren't attending to their Green Lanterns.
I mean, the Green Lanterns were almost criminals.
Oh, yeah. They were doing themselves. Whatever they wanted. I mean, I think... Like, Sinestro, at that point, had pretty much enforced the law on Kurigar.
Yeah, he had become almost a dictator.
Oh, yeah, he was Hitler. So. He was a Hitler. I mean, there was Green Lantern flags flying in the streets mm-hmm. for, I think, like, still at points, Kurigarians hate Green Lanterns.
Oh, they do.
Because of Sinestro.
So I always, or not always, but recently have likened some of the things Sinestro did during that time to what Bronn did.
Yeah.
In Game of Thrones during the Siege of King's Landing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he was in charge of the King's Guard, or not King's Guard, the Night's, not the Night's Watch, the Gold Cloaks.
Sorry. Yeah.
And he went around, and before the siege happened, he gathered up all the known thieves.
Yeah.
And threw them in jail. That's totally a Sinestro thing to do, yeah. you know? You know,
follow it was, my law, and my law yeah. is the rule.
So
I wear a ring and I will snap your neck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So. So what makes Sinestro even more interesting, though, is he turned away from the Green Lantern yeah. Corps, and found a yellow ring.
Well, he got banished to Quard.
Yeah, which is the antimatter universe.
Yeah, it was the in that story. Yeah, it was the antimatter universe, and he had the
weaponers.
Yeah, the weaponers built him a ring because they were enemies of the Green Lanterns too, and they built him a ring that was supposed to be the opposite. Of the green ring.
Right.
And then he came back and was pretty much a thorn in Hal's side continuously. And,
at the time, the Green Lantern ring was
susceptible
to yellow. Yeah. Which led to some
just
great...
Just like Alan Scott's was susceptible to wood.
So it's like a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
But no, it was some of the cool things with the yellow is like Green Lanterns getting mustard thrown at them and
yeah.
it kind of getting through, right. you know. But they've since retconned that.
Right, yeah.
And the yellow ring is one of those things where something
like,
else now.
You know, obviously for the time that the book was created, it was kind of just one of those things where we got to find something that's a weakness because this ring is, you know. the weakness is the person who's using it to me.
Yeah, the ring bearer is the weakness.
Yeah.
You know, again, Sinestro, he was created in 1961.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's been around for quite a while.
Yep.
John Brome and Gil Kane came up with him.
Well, sure, yeah.
So then he has since morphed into something different with the Sinestro Corps.
Yeah, I think that was, like, you know, a good way for Geoff Johns to go with that character. And that obviously was another character who had died and came back. And it was just one of those things where Geoff Johns had a good idea of how to set these characters up and, you know, had a good idea of what he wanted to do. Obviously, you could tell he was a fan of these characters.
It was a great fresh take on them. And then, so instead of it being a yellow ring that was the only thing that was capable of stopping the Green Lantern ring, it became similar to a Green Lantern ring where the Green Lantern rings are now fueled by willpower.
Right.
And the yellow rings are fueled by fear.
Yeah. Literally recruiting anybody who inflicted fear throughout the galaxy.
When it tried to recruit Batman during the War of Light, or the Sinestro Corps War, that was a great one.
Yeah. So. Well, it would have been somebody who made sense.
Wait, you draw fear. All right, so then you have a couple more, but like my one I have is Sodom Yacht, who is a relatively recent 1986 as well, from Tales of the Green Lantern Corps annual.
Right.
But he became Ion, which is you know, the
spirit
embodiment of willpower.
Right, yeah. The same as, you know, Parallax is to the Sinestro Corps.
So and what makes him cool is he is from Daxam, he's a Daxamite.
Right.
Which, like, oh crap, I just had a brain fart. From the Legion.
Well, they're cousins of the Kryptonians.
Yeah. So Mon-El is a Daxamite. And you know, I really enjoyed his run as Ion.
Right.
Especially after Kyle had given it up and everything. He was brash and cocky and, you know, he got humbled really, really quickly.
Well, sure.
And, you know, it was just one of those things. You know, in the New 52, he was gone for a while. Like, you know, they kind of wasted that character. I mean, the New 52 wasted a lot, but
well, like I said, Geoff Johns was doing things with these characters that nobody else really can catch on to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at this point, it's just, you know, from everything I've flipped through and read and stuff I haven't read that I've read about online, it's just one of those things where they're not catching on to it at all. Geoff Johns wrote an epic story.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody's been able to do an epic story since then with those characters.
Well, I feel like they're kind of hamstrung. And this is a character that is very much in that role where he started out as something. He became something greater than himself.
Right.
And then he made an ultimate sacrifice and turned a red sun into a yellow sun to power the Daxam people.
Right, because the Sinestro Corps had enslaved the Daxamites at that point.
So he was one of those characters who is a kind of a jerk.
Right. You know?
But at the end of the day, he made the ultimate sacrifice when it needed to be done and was really a true hero. So, I don't know. I just enjoy him. I love the way he's drawn.
Sure.
You know, there was a list of like sexiest comic book characters, and he was like in the top 50 or whatever. All right. So another one of mine is Jack T. Chance, who was he was one of the Lost Lanterns the first time Lanterns came around when Hal Jordan became Parallax and had cut a swath through the galaxy and Jack was one of the Lanterns whose ring was depowered and ended up, you know, trapped on an alien world with another one of my favorites. But he's fun. He's blue skinned. Oh, he's a 90s character as well. So, that's not really popular to say. I like 90s characters.
Green Lantern Corps Quarterly.
Yep, number one.
Yep.
From Joel Ostrander and
John Ashton.
Oh, sorry, John and Henry Flint.
Yeah.
He
was an unusual looking one when they introduced him because he wore a leather jacket and he had tattoos.
He had the duster leather jacket and like the little skull bolo tie thing. He was a fun one. And he actually had a different oath than the rest, which was, you know, pretty fun.
Yeah.
Should I say it?
If you want to.
So, it says, "You who are wicked, evil, and mean, I'm the nastiest creep you've ever seen. Come one, come all, put up a fight. I'll pound your butts with Green Lantern's light. Yowza."
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, to me, like, anytime it's like kind of a silly, goofy, you know, lantern thing, I definitely hop on board with that. But yeah, again, he's one who died, came back to life.
I don't know if he died or not.
Parallax actually did kill him at one point.
I don't remember that.
Yep. So
Emerald Twilight.
Yeah, he was captured. He was one of the Lost Lanterns, and then he died in the Emerald Twilight stuff.
Okay.
All right, and then another one of my favorites is Estelle, who is a robot.
Mm-hmm.
Green Lantern. Another great action figure from DC Direct, by the way.
Yeah.
That looked nothing like what the character looked like, that then informed the design decisions of what the character would look like in the books. I like Estelle. He's, 1962, Green Lantern Volume 2, Number 11 was his introduction. He's just one of those Green Lanterns who you wouldn't think that a robot would be a great Green Lantern. But I mean, he definitely was one that would learn and, you know, continue and do things. And it was really cool to see him in the Justice League episode, Justice League Unlimited episode.
Yeah.
The return when Ivo's robot came back, their version of Amazo.
Yeah.
Came back and the Green Lanterns kind of made their last stand at Oa. And all of that fun stuff. And, yeah, I don't know. But he's just one of these ones who did, you know, what needed to be done. He was always a good partner. He, you know, worked well with the humans, which not all Green Lanterns did. And
right, yeah, he was adaptable and more.
That's one of the reasons I enjoy him.
Be a member of the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And that, because I think for some members of the Corps, it's just let me do what I have to do, and you know, they learn things as they move along.
Yep. And then another one of yours is Keyhan.
Yeah.
Is that how I say it? I never know. He's a February 1994. He's a Ron Mars creation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Kind of looks like a bull man.
Yeah. He's a great one.
Yeah. He's the second in command of training.
Mm-hmm.
The Corps members of that. He's pretty much a hard ass like Kilowog.
Yeah. So. I think he's more of a hard ass than Kilowog because he doesn't have the soft, mushy inside like Kilowog has. But another one who was Parallax had left for dead.
Yeah.
He died and came back. Or I guess he was believed dead. But
yeah, most of the ones that when Parallax went through and took their rings and that, they weren't all dead. They just had been stranded in space. I think a part of Hal still was there because he didn't kill them.
All. Right.
He, you know, would leave them to be able to breathe. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, he took their rings.
Get where you got to get. Yeah. Some of them were stranded on planets. Some of them were stranded on asteroids. Some of them did die because they were standing up to him and Hal wasn't having any of it at that point.
Yeah.
And then you're one of your favorites. It's on your list.
Yep.
Boudica. Got her hand cut off.
Yeah. So Keyhan and Boudica were part of a group that were captured by manhunters.
Yeah.
In Sector 3601.
Right.
With Graf Torin, Liara, I think that's how you say that.
Yeah.
Creon and Tomar II, who's Tomari's son.
Yeah.
Who Tomari is another great one. I think he's on. No, he's not on your list.
I put him on my list.
You did not. I considered putting him on mine.
I thought I did.
But Boudica. She's a warrior, so like think of like Amazons but like Alien and things like that, and she actually lost her ring hand, so she's one of the few who actually wears the ring on her left hand. And
well, and she was like one of the last ones before Hal got to Oa,
right,
during the Emerald Twilight, and she fought him pretty much to a standstill, even though he had like 10 rings on his fingers at that point. And he did what you wouldn't imagine he would did. He cut her hand off.
He just took it. So
yeah, and he took the hand with the ring.
And then she, for a long time, had a, you know, a construct hand.
Yeah.
Which was, it made for really cool. what made me really fall in love with this character is she had this just code of like right and wrong, right?
Yeah.
Correct. Right. But she didn't ever like go too far. Right. As a Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And then when the Guardians decided they were going to form the Alpha Lantern Corps, which was essentially the military police or the JAG Corps, yeah, if you would, of the Green Lantern Corps, she volunteered, where they put a battery in their chest. Well, they replaced their heart with a battery. They
cut them apart and then rebuilt them.
They each got a second ring.
Their face didn't look like them.
No.
And, you know, nothing looked like them.
And so once she became an Alpha Lantern, I mean, it was like night and day different character. She was probably the most brutal.
Well, the Alphas were Manhunter Lanterns, mm-hmm, pretty much. So it was, you know, the rule of law was their rule. And you know, there was no breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And now, when they showed up in a battle, though, you knew the battle was won.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, they were pretty much, you know, if they were not in the middle of a battle and the Green Lanterns were losing as soon as they show up, you know.
That battle was
because they were relentless. I mean, they were relentless monsters, pretty mm-hmm much.
So in the Alpha Lanterns were last seen in the Final Crisis story that happened and all of that. And I don't think she's been back since.
No, so I don't think that they know what to do with those characters either.
She was in the one of the animated Green Lantern First Flight.
Yeah.
Where she was working with Sinestro, which was a really cool way to do the character. So yeah, like I said, I always enjoy her. She's great. She was voiced by Grey Elise in the Emerald Knights version, who was Azula, who we talked about last week. In First Flight, she was voiced by Trisha Helfer, which, you know, is always fun. But yeah. All right. And then your last one is Arisa.
Arisia, yeah.
Arisia.
I just pronounced it how it's spelled.
Okay.
Yeah.
She is, I always call her Arisa. She's, you know, 1981, yeah, Tales of Green Lantern Corps number one.
A pretty good long time.
Created by Mike Barr, Lin Wynn, and Joe Staton. Stanton.
Yeah.
She's a cool one, and she was one of the first ones to have a different look for the Green Lantern just
originally
costume.
She was like in a Green Lantern costume, mm-hmm, but like the whole thing where we were talking about Kilowog and them showing up, when they came to Earth, she literally transformed her costume and became like she looked like a fashion model.
Yeah.
And eventually her character becomes a fashion model, and she had a crush on Hal.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hal told her, you're just too young.
Yeah.
You're too young for me. Because she was only like 14 or 15 when she got the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Her, of all the Green Lanterns, hers is a legacy. Like, mm-hmm, literally, her ring was her uncle's ring, and it was her dad's ring, mm-hmm, before it was her uncle's ring, and it went down the whole family line, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that doesn't normally happen.
The ring decided that family... But when Hal told her she was too young, she literally used her willpower and made herself older.
Right, which is cool.
So she got involved with Hal. Eventually she gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then she shows up in the Lost Lantern story as one of the Manhunters came to Earth, took her body, and she wasn't dead. She was in a
suspended state.
She wasn't dead. She wasn't alive in the cyborg Superman,
mm-hmm,
Henshaw, or whatever you want to call him, cyborg, woke her up. And she was one of the prisoners, mm-hmm, on their planet doing, I think they were all slave labor at that point.
Yeah, they were all like being drained of their will and that kind of stuff. The other cool thing is she ties into one of my other favorites, Sodom Yacht.
Yeah.
At the end, she was kind of his mentor and girlfriend and all this stuff, and it led for some pretty cool.
She's definitely like a unique human looking one, mm-hmm, because they're, you know,
humanoid.
Some of them are humanoid looking, but she's very unique with her skin color, mm-hmm, and her hair color
and the pointy ears
and her dress, like the way she dresses and that. She's one of the ones that stands out as a character that, you know, they need to do more with.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do a book called Green Lanterns, it should be about just different stories
lanterns.
With the Green
they
Lanterns.
They needed to get away from Earth.
Well, yeah.
And
it's one of those things where focus on the actual like core.
Don't That's why the Green Lantern core book has always been a favorite. Yeah. You know, but yeah, and then my my last one is Mogo, the Living Planet, mainly because he's literally the heart and soul of the Green Lantern core.
Yeah,
and for a while after Oa was destroyed, he was their home.
Right.
So,
which totally makes sense. Yeah. I mean, why would the Green Lantern planet not be the home of the Green Lanterns?
Yeah.
You know, he would protect them over anything.
And in as much as like Kilowog helps train them or trains them, Mogo helps with that by putting them through a Jedi-esque trial.
Mogo was more what I would say like a counselor or a psychologist.
Yeah.
And that he didn't talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he more showed what he was saying to them by showing them themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was like, you know, the way that they wrote Mogo during the John's run is like one of the best ideas, because it's not just a floating planet who's got a Green Lantern symbol on it, and that it was more, why is he a Green Lantern?
Right.
And that, I mean, he's got the biggest battery in the whole core, so, you know.
Yeah, and he was created by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons.
Well, yeah.
You know, so, like, what better creators to have?
I mean,
you know?
Just Alan Moore come up with some wild Green Lantern stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was, that's some of the Alan Moore stuff I actually like.
Oh, yeah.
So. But no, he eventually became the one that distributed the rings as well. Right, so, yeah. And during, was it Blackest Night when John destroyed him or had to destroy him?
It was around that time.
Yeah. So like John, who was, overtaken with the compassion, to go along with his Green Lantern ring,
right,
which was such a cool look for John Stewart with the camo and like, you know, the purple Barrett 50 cal and he was at Mogo's core and he fired like a shot, and not the first time he's destroyed a planet, but you know, but then like he spent the next however many issues like going around and gathering up all the bits of Mogo,
which was really cool,
which, and then kind of Mogo came back together.
It just makes sense. I mean, you know, he is essentially a Green Lantern ring and battery, so you can't blast him apart.
No. And one of the other really cool things about him is you think, oh, he's a living planet, how boring. He actually has a nemesis in Ranks, the sentient planet, who became a Yellow Lantern,
right,
and was like kind of the base of Yellow Lanterns in the current Rebirth
version. If there's one, there's got to be another out there, so
In the current Rebirth version, the Oa's gone. The Sinestro Corps has, like, they're the ones running the galaxy, right?
Okay.
And they're living on War World,
where Oa was. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, man. I like I said, I really liked Mogo, in the Green Lantern TV series, animated series.
Yeah.
Mogo was great. We got introduced to Saint Walker that way.
Yeah.
St. Walker is the leader of the Blue Lanterns.
Right.
Which I guess we should talk about the color ones maybe another time.
Oh, but, yeah. We can talk about the cores.
Yeah.
And that would be a different episode for sure.
But, yeah, so I think, like I said, one of the coolest things about the Green Lantern core, and I think the biggest takeaway.
You're talking about the series or the...
Just the institution.
Yeah.
Is it's this gigantic mixed bag of crazy.
Well, yeah.
That has the best of intentions, but typically fails.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, what you would think, like, the military, the U.S. military, at least, is. It's a bunch of people from all walks of life.
Right.
Who, you know, join up, you know, by choice.
Well, they're conscripted for the most part.
Yeah, but so. I mean, it's one of those things where you join up and you learn different things about different people from your country and from around the world.
Right.
And that's one of the things I think that, you know, it would be interesting to see somebody from the military write a Green Lantern story.
Yeah, that would be
because cool. I think it would be, you know, a different take on it.
Was it Tom King from the CIA who's doing Batman right now?
Yeah.
It'd be cool to see him.
Yeah, did he serve in the military or
I don't know. Yeah, but like, I mean, but
I
like,
just think,
you know,
somebody who served in the military would be interesting because it would be a different take on it because they have experience of what you would think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously it's 3,600 sectors with two pretty much. So 7,200 people, you know, of different walks of life and different associations all working together.
Yeah.
So it is. It's a military
organization. And you get like sometimes where there's planets who are in conflict in the same sector, You get lanterns who are, you know.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, lanterns lose planets. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tomar Ri lost Krypton.
Yeah.
Krypton was Tomar Ri's planet. Oh, yeah. So, you know.
Way to go, Tomar Ri. No,
did you ever read?
I never did. Happened?
So. Like he was on his way to save it.
Okay.
And got blinded. And literally could not get there in time. And when he when he got there, it blew up. Like it blew up in his face. Pretty much. Wow. And that. So you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So one last thing to talk about is one of the like the tenets of the Green Lantern Corps for a long time was they don't have the ability to use lethal force.
Yeah.
And. You know, it always let the stories go to a certain point, right?
Right, yeah.
And then the Guardians decided to make a change during the Sinestro Corps War when the Sinestro Corps did not have that mandate.
Right.
And I feel like when they took away that restraint, like the books got, I don't know, I don't want to say they got worse, but they definitely weren't the same kind of story.
Why?
You know, you know, and I'm not against, like, killing in comics. You know, I like Spawn. I like The Walking Dead. Well, you know, I like that kind of stuff.
They're a police force that could not defend themselves from people who could kill them.
And I felt like the thing about what made them awesome was they always looked for that better way to do things.
Right.
And, you know, especially because at that point they'd been reborn. Order. They were a unit.
The thing was is they were only them.
Right.
There was no other rings. There was no other. And when the Guardians realized that they can't defend themselves because these guys have rings as powerful as them, then the Guardians were like, we're going to have to enact this.
Right.
Yeah. And it was just for them to be protected, pretty much.
Yeah.
And they weren't just going around killing people.
Well, at one point they kind of were.
Well,
but,
you know.
But that's where the Alpha Lanterns came in. And we got good stories out of it. But, you know. I mean, there was even the story where the one Green Lantern was gonna like crack and give up the code to his ring,
and
I think was John Stewart killed him.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, we wouldn't have gotten that without that. So,
well, and at that point, it's like, what, you know, do you let somebody just like give up their give up the codes to this ring, you know, and pretty much let anybody run wild with it? Or do you just take them out?
Right.
Take them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Like, I just think that it made for some just easier storytelling and less compelling. That's all.
Yeah. You know.
That's just me. My opinion.
Choosing who lives and who dies can be a compelling story. And I think that, you know, they did well enough with that.
And it was interesting, too, that none of the four Earthbound at the time really bought into the, you know, killing.
Well, and I don't think a lot of them bought into it. The ones who did, you've seen consequences. Yeah. Like Lyria did it and became a Red Lantern.
Yeah.
And other ones, you know, got kicked out and showed up as Sinestro Corps members eventually. So it's one of those things where, you know, I think you have consequence when you choose to do that. But, you know, being that some of them are military anyways, Kilowog was military before he was a Green Lantern. Kahan was military before he was a Green Lantern. So it's one of those things where, and John, I mean, John was a Marine.
Hal, technically.
Well,
but
test pilot. They never said.
When he booted out of the Air Force.
Yeah, I think he never made it through the academy or whatever because he was a crazy person.
Yeah, crazy person indeed.
But, you know, it's one of those things where you're taught restraint.
Yeah.
And just the ones who didn't have restraint who were willing to kill weren't going to make it in the Green Lantern Corps anyways.
Yeah.
So, you know, even with that being allowed that, it's one of those things where a police officer just doesn't go out and just shoot people.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to be no restraint.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. All right. Cool.
Break their legs.
Break them.
Shoot them in the leg.
Shoot the hostage.
Shoot them in the leg. Shoot the hostage.
Anyway, all right, so that's the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one of my favorite lines of books.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It has its up points and its low points and all that type of stuff, excuse me. There's definitely, being that I've read it since 1989, there's definitely been some ups and downs in that book.
I mean, this was definitely one of the ones. I mean, Green Lantern, like the Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps specifically, were,
I don't
were
really
definitely
have a problem with Kyle.
On my list. I know you don't.
Yeah. So. Kyle, my problem with Kyle is that they went in a direction that I wouldn't have went in, even with Hal going crazy.
Yeah.
Because I think that would have, you know, and they didn't have a Geoff Johns at that time. Because Geoff Johns built off of Hal going crazy and made that Parallax story make sense.
Yeah.
Where when I could understand coming out of Coast City being destroyed, Hal losing it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Guardians didn't do anything. It's like, you know, the first thing he would have done was turn his ring off.
Yeah.
You know, and got him some help.
Yeah.
And that would have been, I think that would have been more of a story to see how the Green Lanterns would have dealt with Hal grieving and helping him.
Yeah, that would have been a great story.
Yeah. I think that would have been more interesting than, you know, some of the things they did with Kyle. Because some of the stories with Kyle were really like, whoa.
when Kyle is good, like when Kyle's written well, he's an awesome character.
Right.
When Kyle is not written well, he's a whiny bitch.
Right.
You know, I mean, just plain and simple. But yeah.
Hal Jr.
kind
of. Hal kind of is the same way, too. If you look at some of the storylines with Hal, it's just like, what is wrong with you?
You know, let's be honest. They're all, like, all four of the main Earth ones are pretty whiny.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jon Stewart whined so much that he gave himself psychosomatic paralysis.
Yeah.
You know, Guy Gardner never stops whining, which is the beauty of that character. Right. But, you know, he knows
he's
more
the ego talking. So, you know,
but anyway,
it's fun. I mean, and there's cool things that they've done with the Green Lantern books. There's a Batman Elseworlds where Bruce Wayne got the Green Lantern ring. And that's one that's definitely like a cool one to check out.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, the nail, they show up in the nail and it's just, you know. Yeah, if you want to see like a really good, like, well done piece with Aresia and, you know, some of the core, the nail is Alan Davis and Paul Neary just like knock it out of the park with those guys.
Yep.
They certainly would like to see them on the Green Lantern book.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
So, Gleason and Tomasi and Gleason did a great job Green Lantern core book. So.
Well, and it's one of those things where, like I said, there should be a Green Lanterns book that is, you know, like the Legends of the DC Universe, where it tells different stories about different sectors.
Yeah.
You know, like, even if it goes 3 issues or 4 issues, and it don't have to be the required 6 issues that they do for trade paperback.
So, having Hal Jordan in the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
And then Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
That Green Lanterns book, it's just... to focus on two lanterns, first off, that are both rookies, essentially, and they are in a constant game of one-upsmanship that nobody cares about fan-wise.
Right.
You know, like, Simon Baz was gone from the comics for a couple years.
Well, he was part of the Lost...
Right.
Yeah, group.
But, like he was never... Like, he was never embraced, you know? He just kind of...
It was... I think it's difficult for that character because of the fact that he is a Muslim and, you know, people still aren't open-minded enough.
And that the ring, like, he was in the middle of running away from the police and the ring chose him at that time. It's like, okay.
But he wasn't running away from the police because he was a criminal. It was because they thought he was a criminal.
But the ring doesn't know that.
The ring knows that he is, you know, worthy of him.
Yeah.
Worthy of it.
But...
That's the thing that I don't think people understand is the rings choose people because the ring knows that deep down they are a good person with strong will.
Yeah. So Green Lanterns, right?
Yeah.
Instead of having these two rookies based on Earth,
they
should be on MOGO or OA or wherever the Green Lanterns are at the moment, since they're all coming back now. They should be out there learning to be Green Lanterns instead of patrolling Earth. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
It shouldn't even be that book. It should be, you know, a anthology type book.
You're right. Yeah. It should be like
different writers, different artists. Mm-hmm. Bring them in. Let them do their stories. Mm-hmm. That way, DC would have a book where you'd have stories built up for a couple of years. Because if they just said, just do a 3-issue arc about this character, a 3-issue arc about this character, where's this character been, is this character dead, you know, introduce a new Green Lantern that has the ring of somebody that we knew and that died at some point, and explain why they're dead. I mean, that's the thing, is like, there's so much you could do with it, and
they're being very myopic with it. Or not myopic. Well,
everything's got to take place on Earth because Earth is the most important planet in the universe.
It's not. It's not. Yeah. It really isn't. Anyway, all right. Well, I think that's the show.
Okay.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. A little tired.
Yeah, you look tired. All right, guys. We're the Infamous Podcast. You can find us at infamouspodcast.com on social media. We're Infamous Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. That's about it.
Yeah.
New episodes of the show come out every Friday. And if you like what you hear, please track us down on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to us. And, you know, a 5-star review would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah. Let us know what you think about the show. Let us know what you think about what we talked about.
Yeah.
This week, last week, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that next week, we're starting Star Trek Month.
Yes.
So we're going to do a little talk about the original series next week,
which I need to catch up on again. Yeah. It's been a while. So, my Oz marathon is going to have to stop, and my Star Trek marathon is going to have to begin.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
All right, guys. Well, have a day. Great day.
Where can they find you?
Oh, sorry. I totally forgot about us. Yeah. You can find me online at Brian Tudor on pretty much any social network.
Not the magician.
I mean, I'm a magician in different ways. Not
make yourself disappear.
So.
And there you have it. You can find me on Facebook,
Illusions,
Twitter,
Michael,
and Instagram.
Yep.
At Johnny Podorf.
Yep. So, yeah. Illusions. Not tricks. Illusions. A trick is something a whore does for money.
Magic. Anyway.
All right, guys. Have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever you're listening to this. And if you have any questions, email us at contact@infamouspodcast.com.
Enjoy.
Later.